I don't believe this. Came in off the tree, and just look at this. Well, that is unbelievable. I haven't seen that in such a long time.
Welcome everybody to another episode of Bogey or Better Podcast. I am Dylan, and we've got co-host Cam. How you doing, Cam?
Hanging in there. I wish I could have played some golf today. I know it was windy, but the weather wasn't too bad, right?
I mean, it was cold and windy. I mean, I felt like I was kind of playing in the UK a little bit.
Really?
It was. I mean, the wind were just consistent at like probably 15 miles an hour. Maybe got up to 20 a few times.
That can make quite a difference on a round.
Yeah. I had one shot that was just directly into the wind. It was like 140, and I grabbed a 7-iron. It was actually hole one, and I grabbed a 7-iron for 140 and missed it left, but I was pin high. It just killed it.
I still played
really well. And, you know, we had a range session Wednesday, me and you.
Mm-hmm.
And I changed a little bit in my iron swing. I'm not taking the club so far back, which has just helped tremendously with consistency in the middle of the club face. You know, just really hitting it solid now. And that helped tremendously and played pretty well today. Didn't really keep score. I was with Carly, so was kind of helping her too. And we're making headways with her swing as well. We're getting there. But yeah, it was a good day. Yeah. We walked nine. So it was nice.
That's always fun. I mean, last time I took Sarah, we played nine, and I just basically doubled her nine and was like, because I think she was at like 125, I think, mm-hmm. if she had played 18. And I was like, you know, now you have a starting point, yeah. You know, relatively, and now you can just keep going based on that. Because I think she wants to... I think she really does want to get better. Like, I think she wants to enjoy it. She actually, like, 10 yards and in on the green, like, chipping, mm-hmm. she was on it.
Nice.
Just with a sand wedge, not high lofted or anything. She would just get it. It would just get up in the air, land right at the fringe, roll towards the hole. I mean, she's got that part down. So, it's just, honestly, just getting consistent, just be able to hit the ball.
Mm-hmm.
is really going to make a difference, because the little things like whiffing it or topping it and it just going a couple yards, that's super debilitating.
Yeah. Once you start making contact with the ball pretty consistently, that's when it starts to get fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, even if you are still, you know, hitting it into the woods or whatever, at least you're still making contact, whiffing it and, like you said, chunking it and it going 2 yards, that's not really fun.
No. But she did good. And she's got that new Kirkland's putter that mm-hmm. I added all the weight to on it, and her putting is like changed completely.
Yeah.
All that weight, it's not really smart. You're supposed to go, actually, I mean, for her, I think like 15 grams added on mm-hmm. is a lot, but I went and put the 20s in with the super stroke. Mm-hmm. I guess it adds more weight right in the center of the grip. So right. It adds a little more gravity, you know, down. So it keeps the club head down. And she played a lot better. She didn't really, like, mishit the ball. Because with her putter, like, she would kind of be... It's funny. She'd kind of putt like Tony would, you know. Aim one way and then just, like, hit it. And it would just go completely, you know. Because she just didn't understand face control.
Right.
But that putter is a blade now. So it's not super forgiving. It's a blade.
Yeah. It's got that, like, Scotty Newport.
Mm-hmm.
kind of shape to it, which it just looks gross me looking down at it. I hate looking down at a blade like that. Your square back is about as close to a blade as I would ever get.
Yeah, it's got a nice chunky feel, mid mallet almost, where you can be a little confident. But I've never been a mallet guy, so that's we are two different putter styles.
Oh yeah,
and I've hit yours. I like the way yours feels, but I mean I leave it short too. So.
Yeah.
it's just really what exudes the most confidence. And,
yeah.
And she loves it. So we'll probably play that until like it actually starts to matter.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll go maybe get her like, you know,
TaylorMade Spider,
or even like an Odyssey. Like,
dude, that triple track, I tried it. It is money.
Yeah.
I mean, it's basically a TaylorMade Spider. I mean, which I've found out why that is. So, you know, the TaylorMade Spider, that putter has been probably the most popular putter on tour.
At least on tour, I would say.
Like the top, I mean, probably out of the top 10 players in the world, probably 5 of them are using it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the creator of that putter, who worked for TaylorMade, left TaylorMade and went to Odyssey.
Really?
Yeah. And so.
Wow. I mean, that's big for Odyssey. I didn't know that. Because, I mean, that spider is quite wonderful.
Yeah.
I know you tried it. It didn't live up to the hype to you, did it?
The spider?
Mm-hmm.
The spider did not live up to the hype to me, which it may have been because it might not have been the shaft that I needed, like the shaft bend
or anything
like that. But man, that triple track, it was money.
My dad has the basically square back Odyssey, like the the Odyssey copy of the square back, and it's got the triple track on it.
Yeah.
So
I love that for lining up. It's really nice.
It's really nice because, I mean, if you don't use your ball to line up, like if you just use a spot on the green, it's really nice for keeping your body center because you're not just looking at one line. There's three. Yeah. But if you match that with the Callaway triple track ball, and line your ball up, there's no doubt that you are set up perfectly if everything aligns because it's pretty nice.
Yeah, that's the one, I think, downfall for that design is I don't really care for Callaway balls.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't. That's kind of like their weakness there is their ball. But that putter is so nice that I would almost just, if I got that putter, I would just, you know, get the red, white, and blue markers and just draw my own lines.
Yeah, I wonder if they make, like, the same little cups that you put your ball in to put one line on. I wonder if they make a aftermarket.
The one I have.
That does three lines on it?
Mm-hmm, it does three lines.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there you go. I mean, it's not machined, stickered on there, but it's going to be close enough.
Yeah. But I draw one blue. I like one blue line across my ball now.
Yeah.
I've really gotten into lining my ball up now. I used to not, but I really like it now.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it. I haven't been doing it as much, but when I use those TP5 Pix balls, where if you line it up too, it's got the graphics on it. So it really shows you if you hit it a little open or closed, because not only is the line a hair off, but the graphics won't roll over each other.
Right.
So it just depends on the type of putter you like. But, well, today we wanted to talk about the greatest putter, I think, that has ever putted a golf ball.
That is for sure. Tiger Woods. And, I mean, who doesn't love talking about Tiger Woods?
A lot of the people in his documentary.
Yeah, I'll tell you who loves talking about Tiger Woods is HBO.
Yeah.
Do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
Yeah, I want to go first. Okay, so this is a biased review of the Tiger documentary on HBO Max. I love Tiger Woods and I love anything Tiger Woods. So I will still watch on Sunday the second part because I'd like to see where this goes. But I think I side with Tiger and his agent that this is a bit of not, it doesn't have Tiger in it. So it's a little bit just one-sided in my opinion.
Yeah. When I saw the trailer, when I say I was psyched, I was so psyched because I had the understanding that this was going to be like The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan documentary, but with Tiger. And that is what I was going into this thinking it would be. I had no idea because of the timing of everything. Why is HBO doing this now? Over 11, 12 years later after Tiger's scandal?
The idea is the rise because he won the Masters. So it's the fall and then comeback tour is what I'm assuming.
But that's the thing is, I don't feel like they're going in that. I mean, I don't feel like they're really going in that direction of trying to build it back up to his rise. I mean, I'm sure they're going to talk about it. But this just, for me, the music they were playing during it.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the things that were said, they were going into a negative spin of this.
That's exactly what I thought. I felt like this should have been a three-part documentary. Split the first part, and the first part should have been the Earl Woods series. Because I feel like, I mean, immediately they started going after his dad.
Right.
And he is not alive, and
yeah,
it is tough to talk about somebody so negatively like they were, and him not be able to defend himself.
Yeah, you know, I'll play devil's advocate a little bit and say, yes, I am sure there was some unpleasantness between Earl and Tiger. I am sure they had plenty of arguments, and I am sure that Earl may have been, you know, an overbearing parent.
Yeah.
Both.
He was Earl also an army parent.
Yeah. Both Earl and his, and Tiger's mom. I forget her name. But,
yeah, she's a super competitive lady too. Yeah. I wrote down that I feel like that documentary really questions the sentiment that Tiger could have done whatever he wanted to do and his parents would have supported him. It really starts to question that, because they bring a teacher of his, like a kindergarten mm-hmm. teacher,
yep.
and how, you know, she told him that he wanted to play a different sport, and Earl was like, no, he needs to focus on golf. And then some girlfriend when he was like 17 years old, like, I think HBO likes to do this. They like to be mm-hmm. Not a lot of their sports documentaries have the person about it in it.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to be a fluff piece.
Yeah. Well, I kind of have a huge disagreement of even when his ex-girlfriend was talking, my immediate thought is, why am I listening to her?
Yeah.
What? She was 17. They were teenagers. They were young teenagers dating. Why am I listening to this? It doesn't matter. This was, 30 years ago?
At least, yeah.
And I don't know. I kind of disagreed with having her as a key witness.
Yeah.
Tiger was. But, you know, that's just my thinking.
Yeah, I thought the exact same thing, because it wasn't just like one little part. She was very
influential. It was the whole documentary.
Through the whole first part,
yeah.
Now, the second part, well, let's skip to the end real quick. They set up for something crazy.
Yeah.
Did you know who that lady was, or did you have to look her up? Because I had to look her up.
I mean, I kind of assumed who she was. I assumed she was one of the Vegas girls or something like that.
Yeah, I think she was the most popular mistress. Yeah, yeah, the one that allegedly, the main
side piece.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, again, when I first saw the trailer for this, which she was in the trailer.
Yeah.
My thinking is, okay, it's been over a decade. Tiger is ready to face this now
mm-hmm.
in a healthy way. And maybe this will be a therapy session for him where he can have this documentary and he can talk about it and his mistakes and him freely talk about it. But this is clearly not what it is. This is going to be HBO diving into, you know, the worst parts of Tiger's life and dredging up the past, which I just think is so unnecessary.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. I think they could have went in a purely sport. If they wanted the rise and fall of Tiger, I think they could have easily went full sport and his. But that's what I was saying. Like, I feel like in the beginning, it was just about his dad and not about how truly amazing Tiger was at a young age.
Yeah.
Because immediately they jump from him being a child to him being on the amateur championship.
Yeah.
Like, it was like they just jumped. And the only time they go back is when it's about like his relationship with that one girl. It was just very odd. I you know, I wrote down, I said, Earl really saw that Tiger was going to bridge race relations by using his golf skill, which is a lot of pressure on Tiger.
Oh, yeah. Like, the thing, I mean, and the things that Earl was recorded saying.
Yeah.
I was like, this is making me anxious. Just hearing him talk like this. Like, you're trying to, literally, you're trying to make him be like golf Jesus.
Exactly.
And that is just, for a teenager, that's almost setting, you were almost setting your son up for failure.
Yeah.
Talking about him that highly. You know, obviously, Tiger did become the greatest golfer in the world, thankfully.
Yeah.
But, I mean, my goodness, what if he was just, you know, what if he was Steve Stricker? You know, what if he was just
honestly
an average guy? Man, I don't know. That's just a lot of pressure to put on your son. I would never do that to my child and put that much pressure on them. But,
and I think that's where we're seeing the difference in the way Tiger has been with Charlie.
Yes.
And, you know, Charlie was the one that wanted, you know, no one really knew too much about Charlie until this pro-am. Or it wasn't even a pro-am. What would you call that? The
father-son PNC. Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, Charlie really wanted to play it, so Tiger let him. But I think that's where we see the difference.
Yeah. And, you know, Tiger wasn't bringing Charlie on the Dick Van Dyke show and trying to get all this publicity. And, you know, yes, it is two different things, you know. Earl obviously was not a millionaire like Tiger, and he could tell that, you know, he said it himself, oh my goodness, I have something special here.
Yeah.
And I think immediately he saw dollar signs. I think he did.
Yeah.
And, you know, so he was basically a Hollywood parent almost, and was trying to get as much publicity out of his son as possible. And obviously Tiger doesn't need to do that. But also I do think that Tiger knows how his father was when it came to making him stick with golf. Because he, you know, when there was so much talk about Charlie before and after the PNC Championship and about his future in golf, I mean, Tiger probably said it 10 times that, hey, if he wants to play baseball, he can play baseball. I don't care. He can play whatever sport. He can not play sports at all. I don't care. He can do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
Because and I don't think, like, he got that as a child, Tiger.
No, and I think that's the part that's missing from the documentary, is that side of having Tiger say that, to be like, if Tiger's saying that, then it makes you feel like part of what the document, and I'm not saying the documentary is untrue in any way. I'm sure it's mostly factual. It's just the light that they're putting it on.
Oh,
because
let's make this clear.
Yeah.
I do not support anything bad that Tiger has done in his life.
Yeah.
I don't support anything bad Earl has done. I just think that it happened. He made some really bad mistakes. He paid for them dearly. He lost a lot of money and a lot of respect from a lot of people. And had to
for
a long time, and had to build his way back up, because golf is such a clean cut sport in society.
Just look what happened with Justin Thomas.
Yeah, exactly. And I was telling Carly that the other day. Like, I saw that Ralph Lauren dropped Justin Thomas, and it's like, if you could hear, I'm sure, what football players are saying to each other and themselves in the field, I think everyone would be very, very shocked. I feel, you know, obviously he shouldn't have said what he said, but he was in the heat of the moment playing his sport, and, you know, it was a mistake. But anyway, that's for another day. But, but yeah, back to Tiger. I just think that this is very unnecessary to dredge up all of this badness. when really the comeback for him winning the Masters that comeback wasn't about the fall he took from the stuff that happened in 2007? 2007
or 8, something like that, or 8. Yeah.
It's not about that. It's about having like 5 back surgeries and not thinking he was going to ever walk again.
Yeah.
And then winning the Masters. That's the fall and comeback.
Yeah.
He had, in 2013, 5 years after, you know, all of his stuff, he won 5 times.
Yeah.
He already had his rise from the fall of all of that crap. So I don't know.
I think they're merging his sport life and his personal life into one thing.
Which, yeah.
And if you're going to do that, that's fine. But you need to remove sport from it.
Yeah.
And I think they're putting the two together and call it, you know, whatever happened with his family was a fall. And, you know, how it related to golf was he lost all of his sponsorships. Yeah.
Nike. I think that was pretty much it. Nike and Titleist.
Yeah. It was just, that's kind of all that kept him.
Yeah.
But his fall was how he trained his body and how it came back to bite him.
Yeah.
And then the comeback from that, from a sport point of view, is that. But HBO is very into, I mean, they make some great documentaries, and they're doing a fine job with it. I just, the light that they're casting on his family, at least in the first part, because we haven't even gotten to the scandals yet.
Yeah.
And that's the part that's crazy.
And that's why I say this is not a rise and or a fall and rise documentary, because if it was, they would brush over. I mean, they would talk about the scandal, but it wouldn't be the main part of the doc. And I think part two is mainly going to be about that.
Yeah.
And that's what confuses me, is why are we doing this now? Because you could have done this 6-7 years ago when this was still news.
Yeah.
There's
a lot of people that love Tiger Woods that have no idea about this scandal.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Because it's long ago.
Absolutely.
And it's almost like it still happened, right?
Right.
But he's clearly past it. Mm-hmm. His family is relatively past it. I mean, his son is golfing with him.
Yeah, I think he actually has a fine relationship with his ex-wife now, and I think they co-parent, and
yeah.
You know, I think, you know, what was said about Tiger in the first part of, yes, Earl trained him very well on how to be disciplined in the game of golf.
Yes.
But you take a shy, Blasian kid and put him on top of the world with millions and millions of dollars. He signed a $100 million Nike contract at what age?
Something crazy.
Like,
when he turned pro, right? Wasn't that 21? I mean, no.
They signed him $1 million before he even swung a club on the PGA Tour.
That's right.
And
you're
then
right.
I think in 20, when he was 24, signed an all-exclusive
that's right.
$100 million contract.
Nike clubs.
Yeah.
And yeah.
24 years old, $100 million. I mean, yeah, it's going to be, it's going to get a lot of getting used to.
Yeah. And they did talk about, I think the best guest that they had was the friend of Earl's on that military course.
Yeah.
Because he shed some clear, I think that's the light. If you want to shed any light, you know, you can talk about what Tiger saw as a kid and how that could, because that is real.
Yeah.
You know, the talk about the dad being overbearing. It's, if Tiger didn't want to play golf, he wouldn't be playing golf right now.
Right.
You know, maybe he would have went through college because his parent, but as he's an adult, he could have done whatever he wanted to. And he clearly wouldn't have become the greatest in the world. He wouldn't be addicted to golf now if he didn't truly love it.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, you can only force something so much until they're an adult. You know, I mean, they're going to do what they end up wanting to do.
Yeah, as an adult, I don't believe that Earl had the ability or power to push Tiger into only playing golf. I think at that point, Tiger was in love with golf. I do think maybe at 11, 12 years old, hey, Dad, I want to go play baseball. No, you need to focus on your golf. That's about the end of the conversation there.
Yeah.
Which isn't fair, but, it's how it went. But Tiger...
Can't change the past.
Yeah, but Tiger fell in love with golf, and he's obviously still in love with golf. I went through one back surgery, and I actually had the same back surgery that he had, except for he had it, six times.
Right.
And he went through, I'm sure, grueling rehab in order to play this sport again. If he didn't if he didn't love this sport with all of his heart, he would have not have done that. Mm-mm. He would have thrown in the towel and went, okay, I just want to walk again, and that's it. The end.
Yeah. I mean, because he's still Tiger Woods. He could have lived off his name.
Oh, absolutely. It's not about money for him.
No. That the thought of like Tiger did what he wanted to do, and the documentary is almost trying to put the thought in that Earl was right about Tiger. Like, is that point getting glossed over? You know, it's not like he forced him to play golf and Tiger has not been successful.
Mm-hmm.
Tiger's the greatest of this lifetime and probably of all time. And then they're judging Earl on the way that he got him to it. And it's like, he was right. And Tiger's still one of the greatest players out there. And I'm like, can't we just applaud Earl? Like, he's not living anymore. Can't we just applaud the fact that he had the wherewithal to see the greatness and not let his own childish ways maybe get in the way of that? But I'm also looking from a fan's perspective.
I'm not going to applaud Earl. I think Earl was not the best dad. And I don't think Earl was a good role model. I think Earl was a good manager. And Tiger said that of, he told his dad, I don't think you know how to be a father and a businessman at the same time.
Yeah.
And I think that's exactly what it was. And I think Earl subjected Tiger at an early age to badness with Earl's choices with his marriage. And I think that is very effective on a child's brain and its growth. And I think it was a big reason what happened with Tiger in 2007. Yes, Earl was a good... Earl was absolutely right that Tiger Woods was going to be the greatest golfer. He was going to build a bridge for, all races to come and play golf, which golf desperately needed. I didn't realize, I should have realized, but in the 90s, some country clubs were not allowing black people to be members.
Yeah.
In the 90s.
Yeah.
And that is just such a insane thought.
Yeah. It really shows it's not like the race relations, not even just relative to golf, obviously. It's not that long ago that it was still strict in the golf game.
Which...
Especially the Masters.
Yeah, especially the Masters. And, It's absolutely insane, but
it is.
Tiger was the best thing for golf ever. I mean, he just was. And for him to succeed was extremely important to the golf community to open it up and open everyone's eyes. But
I agree. I'll walk my point back saying I applaud Earl. I really mean I applaud the manager.
Yeah, the business and manager side. Absolutely. He saw what he had and he completely nailed it. And was right.
He went full Kris Jenner.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. May not have been the best father role model, but he was a good sports agent.
Yeah. And I think that would have been a more interesting story, and then just trickle in some of the darkness, because, you know, when I mean one of the greatest people in that documentary was the guy, that white guy that played at that course with Earl and talked about the things that Tiger was subjected to on the course, the thing he's supposed to love and the connection that he has with his dad.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is unless they get more into it in the second part, we haven't seen the second part yet, mind you. They really, besides that one scene, that one part with Earl's friend where he was like, we were not the best role models. They didn't really talk too negatively about Earl, about his, when it comes to his, you know, his secrets and his infidelities.
Yeah.
And if they don't, and they only focus on Tigers, that is so unfair.
And, yeah.
We'll see. We'll see in part two, but. Yeah, it's a well shot documentary. Obviously, HBO knows how to shoot documentaries.
Yeah, it is interesting. Everyone needs to see it if you can, because it is quite a good storytelling.
Yeah.
Now, just being that we you know, as Tiger fans, it's a little more interesting. But I think from a cinematic point of view, people want to see it this way.
Because, I mean, you know, Carly watched it with me, and, you know, she doesn't know too much about, you know, golf or even about Tiger and his career. And she enjoyed watching it because, you know, he has so many highlights, so many incredible shots that he made and everything, which they did show, granted.
The U.S. Open, Pebble Beach.
Yeah.
Right. When he just, I think that, like, broken that leg. Really. And then it was early in his career, too, when I thought it was also a U.S. Open. Where second place was plus one and he was minus 10.
Oh, yeah. Like, U.S. Open, he had...
I thought it was Pebble Beach, but I could be wrong.
I think it was. I think it was Pebble Beach. He won by like 12 or 13. He did that at the Masters in 97, yeah. I think.
Yeah, until Dustin Johnson broke his four-round stroke record just this past November or October. Tiger was tied with Justin Spieth for the lowest recorded.
Really, in 97 through 2005, it was like, especially, let's say 97 through 99, it was like you took a player, let's say you took Dustin Johnson and you dropped him in 97 and let him play against all those people in the field. That's what it was like. It was like Tiger was from the future. Because nobody...
Same thing like Michael Jordan.
Yeah. Because nobody swung like him. Nobody. Yeah. There was nobody near as fast as him. I love that part about Phil playing with Tiger.
Yeah.
Phil hit a great drive, and then Tiger took his 3-wood and just blew it past him. And Phil was like, I couldn't recover after that. His confidence was just shot.
Yeah. Yeah, he asked Tiger, he's like, do you normally hit that far? And Tiger goes, no, I normally hit it farther.
Yeah.
And he's done that a lot,
yeah.
Where just to mess with the person he's playing with, he'll go through, even if it's behind the person, they'll hit a driver. He'll play a 3-wood so that he can hit next and hit it really close on the green and force the people to make errors.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of stuff that, even just that mentality his parents put into him.
Yeah.
I like the point where they talked about Earl being like a total jerk on the course and walking in his line.
Yeah.
Jingling change and his keys in his pocket while he was playing, and totally just, and he said that there was a safe word or whatever, that if he was like, if Tiger was over it and he would finish.
Yeah.
But, and I like that they kept that in there, but
no, and that's good.
Earl set this kid up to be the greatest to ever do it.
Yeah, he knew exactly what he was doing when he was building a professional golfer. I mean, that was genius.
Yeah.
But
The second part is going to be interesting because I was doing some research before we started recording because honestly, I didn't know who that last woman is.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you know, she was one of the more popular mistresses.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that she was not there to, she wanted to sit down and just simply tell her story, tell her side, because she was painted as a mistress and she wants to talk about the relationship and that he's not a bad person type. I think that's where she's going with it. And if that's the case, and it's not just like a, let's talk about how awful of a person Tiger is, because I don't know if that's factually true. You can say that about maybe in the time, but clearly he's a different person now.
Yeah, I just, no matter how you spin this, I really don't care if they had a relationship. For me, that almost makes it worse. But
you're probably right.
I just, if part two is nothing but just them diving deeper and deeper into the scandal, they're going to lose me because I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
It happened. It was wrong. It was bad. Okay. He lost what he needed to lose. He suffered. He had to go on public TV in front of the world, in front of his mother, in front of his wife, and talk about it and apologize. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, that's traumatic. And he did it to himself, but still it's traumatic and it's done now. And he should be able to play the game he loves and without HBO profiting from it. And I think that's really where my main objection is.
Yeah.
Because Tiger obviously has not approved this at all.
No.
And they are paying people, which I always thought it was, I thought it was hilarious. The main guy, the guy who, I forget his name, but you know, under it, it said family friend of the Woods family. When I read that, I was like, not anymore. He's not.
No.
He just accepted money to talk kind of negatively about Tiger and Earl. And that just feels so sleazy to me. You're paying people close to Tiger and his family to dish dirty secrets, and it's just, and HBO is profiting from it. And I don't know. It doesn't give me the best feeling in the world.
Yeah, and this last lady talked about how, you know, she basically was interviewed for an entire day. So thinking that way, don't you feel like most of those people were being interviewed for multiple hours? Mm-hmm. And how little of their talking heads, I guess, their interviews were actually used?
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, could you make a completely pro-spin documentary with the same exact people with what was said?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
I would think so, right? I mean, nobody on there, unless it was just like his, you know, if it was just his ex-wife telling stories, maybe not. But honestly, I'd be more interested if she was in the documentary to hear her side.
Yeah, I would have.
Not the girlfriend when he was 16 to 18 years old.
Yeah. I didn't think that. I just thought that was silly. I don't. The fact that she kept that letter tells me everything I need to know. Tells me everything. That you, when you were, let's see, they broke up when Tiger was still in college. So
probably early 20s.
Yeah. So maybe 2 years later after the breakup, you see that you had dated what is now one of the most famous athletes in the world. People calling him the Michael Jordan of golf. So now you're going to hold on to everything that he gave you and he wrote you and blah, 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 just for this moment.
Yeah.
And that tells me everything I need to know.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm sure there's so many other girlfriends between her and Elin were not interviewed at all. I'm like, how did they even find this one? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, the one that had that letter and that alleged bad experience, you know, with his family. Like, I'm just like,
which, you know, Tiger's mom and dad were both very, very intent on his education and his sports. And I can see a lot of overbearing athletes' parents being that way toward a girlfriend.
Yes. As she's just a distraction, basically.
Yeah. And not that it's right, but it is a thing that happens. And I don't think that, I feel like they made that such a big deal that he wrote that letter.
Yeah. I think honestly, they basically said he didn't write that letter, that it was his parents that wrote.
Say that's true. Let's say that his mom wrote the letter. It's still not that big of a deal, man.
Yeah.
Is his first girlfriend. Let's
How many parents tell their kids you can't date this person? Yeah. Practically every set of parents will tell their
right, but it's just something that happens. And
yeah, I think and that's what you're saying, regardless if it's right or not, yeah. The way they portrayed it as it being like this huge like this is thing. Outlandish. Yeah. When it's like, I'm pretty sure most parents that you know, they've got something extremely, like you said, most very overbearing sport parents.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them out there. If you asked all of them, I'm sure a similar instance would be with every single one of
them. So.
But I'm still excited for part two because I really want them to focus on the medical side, what he did physically to become still... You know, back to one of the greats again.
Yeah, the perfect way part two can be for me is if they talk about the scandal for 15 minutes.
Yep.
And then they move on. I have a feeling that is not what's going to happen. But that I would be okay with them talking about it 15 minutes. All right, let's move on to 2008. Now we're at the U.S. Open. He's got a broken leg. And let's continue.
Yeah. Because, I mean, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
If you can talk about the scandal because it happened, like that is history. Yeah. That's part of Tiger's story. But there's a difference between talking about it and delving into it unnecessarily because it does no longer affect the story.
We've already did that. Yeah. This was the hottest piece of news in the world at that point. Every single piece of evidence in every single situation that he was in was spread everywhere on the news, everywhere on TV. So we've already done this.
Yeah.
So let's just not.
I'd rather them talk more about the effect that the sponsorship's pulling out because of those things and how they cared. I mean, he didn't do anything. You're talking morally at this point, but legally, there's people that have done worse and sponsorships didn't want to be connected to Tiger Woods because he wasn't faithful to his wife.
And it's because how big the name is.
Yeah. It just seems crazy if you think about it.
I mean,
like you're talking about football players.
Oh,
basketball players.
Oh, yeah.
It's just totally different.
It's because it's golf. It's because it's just like, you know, it's the gentleman's sport.
It is. So. Filled with awful people that aren't gentlemen.
Yeah.
Which was and I thought that was a good part of the documentary that talked about the things that Tiger had to face while being better than anyone on the planet. Mm-hmm. People still were, I'd be using just terrible language.
He said he heard the N word, people calling him the N word while he was playing in the middle of the round. Like he would have to hear that while playing. Hearing that and then seeing Tiger and how just pumped he would get when he would win, when he would sink a putt.
Oh yeah.
It makes it's very satisfying. It's very satisfying to see.
It really is. And I'm so glad that Tiger won the Masters when we had fans.
Yeah.
Because it was a whole month. Like I was so happy for DJ.
Yeah.
He won. He's played the best Masters out of anybody
he's
in
the best player
ever.
Right now. I mean he just is.
Yeah. By leaps and bounds too. I mean,
he has everything for him is together.
Yeah.
And he's
I'd be interested in a Dustin Johnson documentary now because that's still the beginning of his golf career is not very talked about. That would be an interesting documentary if you're going to do something like that.
He's a rare player that he's won every year on tour.
Yeah.
You know, that's rare.
Yeah, I mean, he's the only one that's done it so far, right?
Tiger. Well,
I mean, Tiger hasn't because he's got injuries and stuff.
Yeah.
I think Dustin's the only player to win every year that he's been on tour, you know, up until now. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, which shows, because we were talking about earlier Dustin's prime coming late in his career, mm-hmm. which is true. His dominance is. Yeah. But his ability to win has been since he turned pro.
He's been a winner. Yeah, since he's been a pro. But
I mean, he's one of the more athletic golfers.
He
imagine, like you said, imagine taking Dustin Johnson, putting him in 97 mm-hmm. on Augusta National paired with Nick Faldo.
Yeah.
That's what you got. Mm-hmm. I would love a documentary voiced solely by Nick Faldo.
I do like some Nick Faldo now.
Yeah.
That was
interesting. I liked having him there to talk about that experience.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah,
seemed unnecessary, but I did like it.
I don't know how I feel. I hope no other tour players are on the dock.
They can't. They wouldn't.
Yeah, I don't.
If Tiger's not on it.
Yeah, I don't. I don't. I thought it was strange that Nick Faldo was on it, but yeah, I hope no other tour players are on the dock in part two. I want, you know who I want on part two? I want Charles Barkley and Michael Jordan to be on part two, because really, yes, Tiger did the wrong things, but I put most of the blame on Charles Barkley and Michael Jordan, because they're the ones who brought him to Vegas. They're the ones who told him, you're Tiger Woods, you need to start acting like it, and got, you know, because he was shy for the longest time.
Yeah.
And they brought him out of his shell, got him drinking, got him smoking cigars out in Vegas. And, you know, that's when it all broke loose. But, yeah.
Yeah, that would be interesting to see if maybe they go. That'd be tough to get Charles Barkley. You might get Charles Barkley. That'd be tough to
get.
Yeah,
he ain't gonna get Michael Jordan on anything. He could barely get Michael Jordan on his own documentary.
Yeah. But he had to be in his house.
Yeah. So. But
we'll end it there. But I will say I'm looking forward to tomorrow. I'm looking forward to watching it. Yeah. But if it's going to be another hour and a half, so I mean it's a 3-hour documentary. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you got to think there's not a lot left to fill, unless they're going to fill 60 minutes of how this scandal and then his rise. They need. I hope they adjust it to focus more on his rise and end with that Masters win. Yeah,
I'm sad because it could have been so good if they would have done what was the last dance, 6 episodes? Mm-hmm. If they could have done a Netflix 6-episode documentary about Tiger, and we go in to the tournaments and we go into the details about what he was thinking that day and hearing him talk mm-hmm. about it. That's all I want in life is that. I want to watch that every day. But no, we got to do this. And so I hope this will get Tiger upset and get him to create his own documentary.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I'm like, maybe if this because this is the thing, like Tiger had to live through that scandal almost 15 years ago, mm-hmm. right? 15 years ago. And now it's on HBO Max and it's going to be broadcasted again. And people are going to be learning about this who, you know, maybe didn't realize the gravity of what was going mm-hmm. on, you know, including us. Mm-hmm. I mean, I understood what was going on, but it wasn't crazy enough.
How old were we?
10.
Yeah. 10, 11 years old.
You know, I mean, I understood. Like, yeah. I mean, I you know, but it just didn't really, it was just like, it just kind of crazy. So I'm still looking forward to it. But yeah. You know, nobody can claim that this was an unbiased review. That's for sure. I mean, this was, but we told you that in the beginning. Yeah. So,
So we'll see how part two goes. Also, I know people were expecting for our 2v2 versus Tony and Adam to be happening tomorrow on Sunday, but that is going to be rescheduled for January 30th because Tony is under the weather. So
COVID-19 protocols. Yep.
Gotta be safe.
We gotta do things the right way. So but that'll be
January 30th.
January 30th?
Yeah, January 30th, Saturday. We'll be doing it then. So tomorrow we'll
give
just
us
be
some more,
a regular round of golf.
Give us some more practice time.
Yep.
And we did adjust. We'll make that announcement.
Oh, yeah.
Adam and Tony played quite a preliminary round.
Yeah.
And our we were separated by 11 strokes.
Yep.
So we agreed to give them a 12-stroke handicap. So
we're going
to
give them the advantage, but that's okay. I like that. So, yeah, 12. Give them six strokes of nine, basically. So,
Yeah. So they're still close, but they together, and Adam and Tony both have been putting in work to get a lot better.
We gave them the 18 when, you know, their number, there was just so many plus fours on their scorecards that I was like, yeah, we'll give them 18 strokes. But they have been putting in the work and they are playing really well. So,
they almost broke 80. Yeah. So, I mean, 18 strokes, you got to imagine, we would have had to play almost professional level. And we recognize that we're not there. But, I mean, we shot under par.
Yeah.
But that was assuming that they would probably shoot in the high 80s.
Right.
But they were probably 9 strokes better than we thought they'd be.
Yeah.
And they didn't play perfect.
Yeah.
So I think looking at that, we both did preliminary rounds. We compared the scorecards. They were 11 strokes back. Give them, since we're going to give them 18, we agreed on 12, and it's going to be nice and close. And it really, really sets that whoever actually plays the best will win, because with 18, it was a little bit too big based on the way they were playing, that we could have played phenomenal and better than them and still lost. Yep. So,
and we're playing stroke forward play, to that. Correct. Yeah, playing stroke play.
Yeah. We're going to play regular stroke. Regular stroke, not match play. Right,
So
match plays points.
Yeah.
If you're giving them a stroke a hole, you could do that. But when you're giving them less than 18, you just play stroke and then you count the strokes up and then either subtract theirs by 12 or add 12 to ours, either way. It'll all be good.
All right. Well, we will see y'all next time. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch y'all later.
See you guys.